Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
What do the Pink Lady Apple, Darth Vader's heavy breathing, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's catchphrase, Hasta la vista, baby, have in common? Well, the answer is that they're all trademarks. Basically, a phrase, symbol, colour, design, or a combination of all of those that makes you stand out from competitors and allows consumers to recognise your product in the marketplace. So to take us through this world of copyright, trademarks and patents and some of the stranger ones out there, I'm joined now in the studio by RTE business journalist Adam Maguire. Good morning, Adam.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well. This is a strange and very interesting one. And it came up recently in a bit of a row between Pantone and Adobe. So what happened here?
Yes, essentially this is a dispute between Adobe, they make the well-known editing software Photoshop, and Pantone, which is kind of like the gold standard of colours. You know, the reason being, if you pick one of their colours, you know, it's the same in one place as anywhere else. So it's, you know, it's a standardised kind of thing. And in the past, the Pantone colours were pretty much built into Photoshop and other Adobe products. But now they're being asking users to pay a fee, $15 a month, because the licence has expired. And if they don't, the Pantone colours that they're using in their designs turn to black, even if it's in an old design. If they open the file, it used to be red, now it turns black.
Get out of
this license.
$15.
$15 a month.
They're having a laugh.
Yeah, I know. they are, but I'm sure someone will pay it anyway.
So you can own a colour now, can you?
Kind of. The idea of owning a colour isn't actually a new thing. It has a very long history, long before trademarks were a thing. Hundreds of years ago, if you wanted a colour for a painting or clothing or whatever else, you had to rely on what you found in nature. And some colours were harder to come by for pigments than others. So it meant that, you know, a small number of people or even a country often had a monopoly over a particular colour. So there's a stone called lapis lazuli, which at one stage was more valuable than gold because it gave these really vivid blues. If you think of the girl with the pearl earring, the blue.
Gorgeous blues,
That shade of blue, that's lapis lazuli. The main source of that, though, for hundreds of years was northern Afghanistan. So it meant that, you know, that region effectively had a monopoly over this colour. Nowadays, of course, much easier to produce your own colour. You know, your phone can pick any colour you want out of millions when you're, you know, putting something up on social media. But it hasn't stopped countless companies from trying to lay claim to particular colours right up to today.
Okay. So like who? Take us through who's been trying to own colours.
Well, I think Coca-Cola is probably the best known example in the world. You know, I don't even have to say what colour I'm talking about that they trademarked. But if you're still guessing, red is the colour of Coca-Cola. The story goes that originally they used red to distinguish their barrels from the barrels containing alcohol because there were taxes that applied. But then it stuck and it became part of the marketing from the 1940s onwards. Another one is Tiffany's, the jewellery brand. That powder blue box and bag, that's a trademark colour, so another jewellers can't use that colour. A delivery company UPS has a trademark on its brown, the brown in its vans and uniforms. 3M has a trademark as well on the specific shade of yellow that's used in post-it notes. So
it's
a wide range.
Just so far, because I mean, I can understand Tiffany wanting to trademark the branding, you know, the logo, but I suppose then you are leaving the door open to another jeweller using your favourite powder blue colour.
Yeah, exactly. And just having a different name on it. And you're not really going to, you're going to see the blue box before you see the name necessarily.
So does that mean then that no one else can use those colours if they're trademarked?
Well, not really. I mean, it is nearly impossible to actually stop people from using a specific colour. You know, even in that Adobe Pantone dispute, some people have published a free to access database of the same colours effectively that anyone can download. They don't need to pay the licence. But really what a trademark on a colour does is form a layer in a brand's defence against copycats. So if you were to launch a soft drink in a red can, you wouldn't necessarily be getting a legal letter from Coca-Cola. There are others out there, but if your brand name was printed on it in that kind of script font and you use white in the font, then you'd be starting to get yourself into trouble. Heineken, for example, successfully sued another Dutch beer brand called Alm about a decade ago. It was using green in its labels and green bottles, but the key was that it also used a red star. It had a similar font, had a similar kind of shaped label as well, and all of those things together meant that Heineken could legitimately say it's mimicking us. But if it was a chocolate company that had a green box with a red star, Heineken would have a harder time claiming people are being duped into thinking this has anything to do with us. And having a trademark on a colour doesn't necessarily mean you have a rock solid claim either. You know, to stick with chocolate companies, Cadbury and Nestle were until relatively recently locked into a long running legal battle over purple. Cadbury had trademarked the use of it on chocolate bars in 1995. It then tried to expand that trademark and Nestle came along and said, no, hang on a second, you can't cover all sweets boots with purple and say it's your colour. And Cadbury had to back down in the end.
It's so petty, isn't it? Are there any colours then that are truly protected?
Well, this is really petty now. There are kind of Vanta Black is what claims to be the blackest black in the world. Apparently it reflects so little light that it's kind of like looking into a black hole when you see it. It's owned by a British company called Nanosystems, but the protection is more to do with the physics of it rather than the colour, because it uses a special coating to actually make this possible. And it has practical uses in things like satellites and infrared cameras. But it caused controversy because the artist Anish Kapoor about 6 years ago obtained an exclusive artistic license to use it in art only. And other artists criticised him, saying he's basically using his money and influence to block off other artists from using these materials. And to get to the petty part, one artist, Stephen Semple, went so far to develop what he called the pinkest pink, and also extremely dark blacks called Black 2.0 and Black 3.0. And he's made them available to license anywhere in the world to anyone except Anish Kapoor.
Well, Anish Kapoor has the blackest black, so he doesn't want his Black 2.0. And his
although
black
Anish Kapoor did then manage to get his hands on the pinkest pink just to prove that he could.
Right, to carry on the argument.
Yes.
So let's talk about the other unlikely things that have legal protection then, Adam.
Yeah, certain types of food are protected. I don't mean the brands, I mean the actual food itself. Tenderstem broccoli is an example of this.
No.
It's a trademark, yeah, held by Sakata Seed Company, a Japanese firm that developed the vegetable. It's not even really broccoli, it's a broccoli Chinese kale hybrid. Apparently took about 8 years to develop and it started appearing in supermarkets in the late 90s. And this trend of getting legal protection on a variety of food is actually quite popular in fruit and veg, particularly apples. You mentioned Pink Ladies as an example of that. Lots of companies trying to blend apple types together to get the best of both worlds. Maybe, you know, the sweetness of one and the shelf life of another, or the, you know, so that it will suit the harvest season in that particular country, or protect against disease or whatever it might be. So Pink Lady is a trademark brand, but it's applied to a specific patented variety of apple called Cripps Pink, which is a hybrid of Lady Williams and Golden Delicious apple. A couple of years ago, a new variety of apple came out in the US called Cosmic Crisp, and that took 20 years of development. There was a $10 million marketing campaign around it. Apparently, the big selling point is that it can last in a fridge for up to a year. So that's because of this special breeding.
They can keep it.
Yeah. Like, do you want an apple after a year?
No. So now let's talk about sounds, Adam.
Yeah, lots of sounds have trademark protection or sound mark protection. Darth Vader's breathing is trademarked by Lucasfilm, now a subsidiary of Disney. Yeah, and the hum of the lightsaber is also, that's another one that Lucasfilm has. NBC Universal has a trademark on that sound that's used in Law and Order. People will identify it.
Let's hear that. That's it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Very, very short. Yeah. It's also used, sounds also used in what's called an audio logo. So there's short kind of stings that would identify a product or a brand. So that little startup chime people remember from Windows, that was an audio logo of Microsoft. Same goes when you turn on your Mac or your iPhone. That little chime is often copyrighted. And there's a really famous one that used to be played on the end of ads to tell you that you had a Pentium processor.
Oh, that's very familiar,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's Intel. So, and again, that's the idea that it's immediately identified. You know what the product is based on that sound. This one is more of a song than a jingle, but the Happy Birthday song was legally protected until recently as well. It's based on a song written by American sisters Patty and Mildred Hill in the 1890s. It ended up in the hands of record label Warner Chappell. They charge a license fee for any use in a TV, film, radio, anything like that. At one stage, they're earning $2 million a year from Happy Birthday alone.
Extraordinary.
But the copyright was deemed invalid in 2016 in the US because it was deemed that the copyright covered the piano arrangement but not the tune or not the lyrics or the melody. They ended up having to pay back $14 million in licensing fees. The copyright also lapsed in the EU in 2017, which is 70 years after Patty Hill died. So that's when copyright lapses on these things.
So they had to pay back money on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if jingles are trademarked, I would imagine catchphrases are too. This brings us to Arnie's Hasta La Vista, baby.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. That was trademarked back in 2007. That was actually 15 years after the words were first uttered in Terminator 2. So, but it is owned by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Let's Get Ready to Rumble was trademarked by ring announcer Michael Buffer. He started using the phrase in the mid-80s, obtained a trademark in the early 90s. Apparently he's earned hundreds of millions of dollars licensing this out. It appears in, you know, in ads and video games and so on. Mm. You know, he started just as a ring announcer at boxing and now has hundreds of millions because of this little catchphrase he came up with.
I wonder about Arnie and his one. Is it more to protect it so it remains his rather than and to make money off it.
I think there's probably an element, I mean, I'm sure he's going to make money off it, he can make money off it, but it's also, yeah, to protect it, to stop others using what would be seen as his image. Mm. I don't know if people know the guy Ferrari, who used to present a food TV show on the Food Network. He copyrighted his name or trademarked his name. And the idea was to stop his name appearing on foods and people thinking it was licensed by him when it wasn't actually.
Fair
so,
enough.
You know, it was just, you know, a kind of protection. But some really, really strange ones in the catchphrases. Paris Hilton has a trademark on That's Hot. That's based on what she used to say a lot in that TV show she did many, many years ago. Apparently, she won a case against Hallmark on the back of that trademark. Taylor Swift has copyright on This Sick Beat, which is a line that popped up in her song Shake It Off. She actually has loads of trademarks when you go through the records. She has things like We Never Go Out of Style and Party Like It's 1989, which I'd say Prince's estate probably have a claim there, because it's clearly derivative of him. Others then of what you call physical trademarks. So Usain Bolt's lightning bolt pose.
That one. Yeah. The arms to the side. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's trademarked.
I'm not allowed to do it. Have I to pay him?
You're going to have to pay
that?
Him now. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, even though you need it on radio. But Mo Farah has trademarked the M.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, no. Putting his hands above his head. Gareth Bale trademarked the heart shape he'd make with his hands when he scored a goal. But his one has the number 11 in the middle, which I suppose is a way of making it more specific.
So if I made a heart shape here, as long as I don't have 11,
you'd be okay. Yeah,
I'd be okay.
Yeah, bunch jumping.
So
11
I don't owe him money. Now,
here's one you have to be careful of. The professional wrestler Diamond Dallas Page trademarked what he called the diamond cutter, which is basically putting your hands together, your index finger and your thumb, and making a kind of diamond shape.
I'm
with
doing
the
it here. Yeah.
It seems quite generic, but he sued the rapper Jay-Z for using it in 2005, and it was settled out of court. So I presume he got a couple of quid out of it.
Gosh, diamond. I owe you money. Usain Bolt, I owe you money. How much, I wonder? How much do you have to pay them if you use it?
I imagine, I suppose, whatever they want or what the court deems reasonable.
And it depends what you have made off the back of stealing their trademark.
That's true as well, yeah.
But there are times copyright is refused. So take us through the ones that failed.
Yeah, so sticking with the physical ones, Gene Simmons from the band Kiss once tried to trademark the devil horns that you make with your hand. He claimed that he was first to popularise it on a tour in the 1970s. He got a lot of backlash and he abandoned it 2 weeks later. The actor Alfonso Ribeiro also tried to trademark the Carlton dance from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the one that he used to do to It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones. It's fairly iconic, and his copyright claim, he was trying to strengthen the case he had against a couple of computer games where the characters were doing the dance, Fortnite characters, for example, doing the dance.
Yeah.
But the judge ruled that the combination of these three dance steps is a simple routine that is not registrable as choreographic work.
Oh, poor
which
Alfonso.
Is fairly devastating for what's kind of his defining moment as an actor.
Yeah.
But Harley Davidson tried to trademark the sound of an engine revving until others pointed out, well, other engines sound the same, so there's not really any point. Budweiser in 2013 tried to trademark the sound of a can opening. Again, was deemed it doesn't sound any different to any other kind of
worth
can
opening.
Worth
a shot, Budweiser.
And another good few other ones, somewhat relevant to what's going on at the moment. Twitter failed in a bid to trademark the word tweet because a third party developer who worked on social media got there before him. Donald Trump failed to trademark the phrase "you're fired," which he obviously was famous for during his term in The Apprentice all those years ago. Ultimately, though, it was deemed to be too similar to an existing trademark held by a board game company called Franklin Learning. They had a board game called You're Hired, and it was thought that, well, it would just be too confusing. It's too similar. But to talk about confusing, this is the one that I'm going to use the word Kylie a lot now in the next minute. The Battle of the Kylies. So,
I know about this one. New Kylie and old Kylie.
Yeah, Kylie Jenner sought a trademark for the name Kylie in 2014. She was going to use it for her makeup line. A year later, the other Kylie Minogue filed a suit saying that it would cause confusion. She pointed out that she's been using the name a long time. In fact, she's owned Kylie.com since 96, which is before Kylie Jenner, before she was even born. So in the end, Kylie Jenner, her trademark was rejected and she launched her makeup brand under Kylie Cosmetics instead. A couple of years later, Kylie Minogue launched her own makeup line, called it Kylie. And she said since that it was just business. It wasn't anything personal.
I remember at the time when that was in the headlines, wondering why Kylie Minogue was bothered really at this stage of her career. But then she has the Kylie wine, which I think is doing quite well for her.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there is an element as well of saying if you see something, if you're a certain generation, if you see the name Kylie on a product, you might assume it's Kylie Minogue and she may not want to be associated with that. But there is the fact that she's also got her own business interests and her own lines of businesses, and it's a way of protecting that. And in fairness, she had a very legitimate claim to say that, well, you can't call yourself Kylie because I was there before you.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it's amazing. It's often petty and there's often very specific things. And sometimes these things aren't tested in court. That's part of it as well. That you can. It's kind of easy to get a patent or a trademark, but it's then a case of whether it holds up in court as well.
And on the whim of a judge. I mean, the you're fired, you're hired thing with Donald Trump, another judge might have gone with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And the same with, you know, I mean, it was 20 years, I think, Nestle and Cadbury were battling over The Colour Purple. So, you know, again, you would have had, you know, appeals and you know, victories and losses and so on. So, you know, it can really depend on who you get in front of you in the day.
Cha-ching for the lawyers.
Yeah, they're the real winners in this, as always.
Adam, thanks so much. Adam Maguire there. Now, coming up next, I don't know if you saw Matt Hancock on I'm a Celebrity last night, but it was extraordinary for all sorts of reasons, including him putting his hand into a box full of rats. We'll be talking about that next.